The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, you've probably had this happen where somebody asks you to do something that sounds like fun, and you agree, maybe too quickly, then about 5 seconds later, you're saying, what on earth have I gotten myself into? Well, I did that not too long ago, and that's why I found myself leaving home around dawn on a Sunday, headed to the Rockaways in Queens.
Look at this. I mean, nobody can surf, but look at the waves. Wow.
I'm sitting out on the beach with the great Bill Finnegan.
Oh,
see that?
Oh,
let's try that again. That was quite a wipeout. I'm sitting out at the Atlantic.
Look at that stance.
Wow. I'm David Remnick, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Bill Finnegan, who's written an astonishing book called Barbarian Days. And we're sitting out here in the Rockaways at the Atlantic, watching a lot of people fall in the water as they try to surf.
There are probably more than 100 people in the water. And the waves are kind of nice. They're small and quick. And one of the odd things about this crowd is that there are no clumps of people where the waves are concentrating, because nobody out can read the water at all. Nobody's reading the waves. And you actually read the waves first before you ride them. I read these as pretty good, with a couple of good spots to take off.
Water looks so nice, I want to go dive in.
So what we're going to do is we're going to get in the water.
Yeah.
And we're going to attempt to stand on a board.
You're going to catch some waves.
Yeah.
You might be well advised to stay on your belly the first couple.
Okay. That's what I tend to do when I surf.
It's low tide, so it's going to be a little crunchy, a little quick. Let's go west, yeah.
Let's go where it's like maximally dangerous. And you began this adventure in life as a really young kid in Hawaii as a way to do what? As a way to get out of the house?
I grew up playing around in the ocean in Southern California. At a certain point, the age of 10, I really admired surfers and how beautiful what they did seemed and how cool. This is in the early, mid-60s.
How long did it take you? How many times did it take you before you could get up on a board and surf a wave?
I think the first wave I caught, I stood up and rode for a long time. But I was a small kid.
The first time you went surfing?
Yeah, but I was a small kid on a big board. I spent a lot of time in the water body surfing.
Just trying
surfing.
To make me feel better.
I spent a lot of time in the water body surfing. I could read waves.
Right.
I've been reading them for years, and that's the crucial thing.
And why did it become an obsession? It wasn't just, you know, everybody, when they're kids, they play playground basketball, or they collect model airplanes, or they do what they do. Surfing for you has never been that. How did that start and why?
Well, surfing is quite different from other sports, and it's not just me. It's for lots and lots of people this happens. It takes a tremendous amount of time to get even halfway decent. I mean, you need to put in basically years during which you have nothing else to do. In other words, you need to be a kid. And once you learn, the pleasure of it is so intense.
What is it? What's the pleasure of it?
Well, riding a wave well, it feels like such an achievement, because you know how far you've had to come to do it. There's that. Some waves I caught in Fiji in the 70s off an uninhabited island. A friend and I camped there, we'd kind of heard about a wave, and then we'd seen this wave with binoculars, and it was absolutely incredible wave. Long, 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 a 300-yard long left over a very shallow coral reef, just going on and on and on, and you're not getting obliterated, not falling
off.
And
in real time, how long does the experience last?
It's probably 10 or 15 seconds, but it feels like forever. I mean, you're in that moment where you are braced for impact, you're about to dive off, and you don't dive off, and you don't dive off.
What are you seeing? What's in front of your eyes?
Well, you're looking down the line. What's the wave going to do? What's the wave going to do? And at a certain point, when you realize that the wave is just going to hold you that deep in the barrel and just fire you like a cannon down this reef, you are free to actually look back deeper into the tube. You're free to look up at the wave that's breaking over your head. You're inside, and you're looking at daylight and sky ahead, and that's where you're headed.
Is it roaring or quiet?
It's noisy. I mean, at a certain point in the barrel, people say it gets quiet, and I think I've felt that, but I don't know why it should be true, because the wave's breaking full force all around you.
All right.
First,
let's
put your leash on. Put it back down.
I have to put a leash on?
Yeah.
This is the third most terrifying thing I've ever done in my life.
So, the two things I told you, it's actually important to remember now.
Board straight.
Straight. Board straight. A second thing I didn't get to finish telling you.
Okay.
Never get your board between you and the wave.
Oh, good you told me that.
You. Yes. It's to the side or behind you.
Good
to
tip.
The side or behind you. Never between you and
excellent
the wave.
Excellent tip.
Third thing.
So the board should always be to your side.
Side or behind you, anywhere but except in front of you.
Because
it will hit
okay.
you quickly.
Okay, great.
And the third thing, and this is for after you fall off.
Yeah.
This could happen.
Which could possibly happen.
Yeah. Get a good breath if you can before you fall off. Fill your lungs. And when you fall in, it's not real deep, it's not a lot of water, but nonetheless, go as deep as you can, go to the bottom, whatever. And then hold your breath and stay down there a little while.
Why?
Because the board is bumping around and you don't want to get hit.
Sake.
And then when you come up, and this is the most important single thing,
yeah.
come up with your arms over your head.
So it's like not
in front of your face. So you
face.
Don't get hit by your board.
And you think that I'm going to remember all this
yes.
in a moment of crisis.
No, I mean, people never do until they get hit a couple times, but
I don't want to get hit any time.
So that's why I think
right.
you will remember.
All right, let's go.
Okay, let's walk this way a little bit. Because
right.
the current's going that way. We don't want to end up on those rocks.
Okay.
Pretty little waves.
You know, Bill, I read your book. I've read your book a couple of times, and I cannot help but thinking this guy has had more fun in about 3 weeks of life than I've had in a lifetime. There are different ways of living lives. You know that Milan Kundera book, Lightness and Heaviness, the heaviness of responsibility, and there's the lightness of living outside, trying to live away from that. And you've done both. You know, as a reporter, you've been in the middle of the worst circumstances all around the world. And then you do this. How does one treat the other?
It's a good description. I mean, I have this sort of bipolar life, and the North Pole of irresponsibility is surfing, you know, dropping everything. It's nature worship. And you have to be ready, if you're going to surf, to, like, ditch all engagements and flee your desk and make all kinds of bogus excuses to editors while you chase the waves when they're there.
But you did it for years at a time.
Yeah, I don't know. If you've got the time and money, you just go. And I just went. You know, like dog whistle orders from on high. And I went to the South Seas, Australia, Southeast Asia, Africa, looking for waves.
And nothing was tugging you back? Parents, friends, money, whatever it is. Nothing was dragging you back to...
Well, ambition was. I mean, I felt like, you know, everybody was getting on with life except me. I'm laying here with malaria in Sumatra. You know, why am I doing this? My parents got fed up with it. After about two or maybe 2.5 years, they just showed up in Cape Town where I was teaching high school. Enough was enough, you know. I mean, they'd had like a few phone calls for me in 2.5 years. It's not that I didn't remember them, but
you never get bored of it.
Bored with waves?
Yeah.
Not when the waves are good.
And so there's always the lure of the possibility of the waves.
Right, and the waves are usually not good, and you spend a huge amount of time chasing good, uncrowded waves.
All right, here we go.
It's fairly cold. I would wear a parka if I could. I didn't exactly grow up in a beach family.
Go ahead and lay down on it. I'll push you out. Good. Good. Go ahead and lay down.
Get on it?
Yep.
My usual experience of the ocean in New York City is when I would go with my grandmother after visiting my great-grandmother to Coney Island. And she would just yell at me and say, "Watch out for the syringes."
You're okay. Don't paddle. Don't paddle. Don't paddle.
What is it in your personality that makes surfing part of you?
I have been surfing so long that it's probably...
It is your personality.
...formed my personality to some extent. And anyway, all kinds of personalities surf, you know.
Right, I was going to say, you're not Mr. Laid Back. I mean, it's not like some cartoon of a surfer. And as a writer and as a reporter, you couldn't be more ferocious and aggressive in your own way.
I think I'm the same person surfing and reporting. I'm fairly intense in the water. I really want to surf. I take some chances. I've had lots and lots of arguments with the guys I surf with. No, we shouldn't paddle out here. I'm paddling out, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of all of a piece.
So you're the guy, when I go out reporting in some place, you're the guy who says, no, we're going to the next checkpoint.
Yeah.
Okay.
I fear so.
Okay, fair enough. Tell me about danger. What's the catalog of your injuries?
Wow, I'm talking about danger. I'm watching people crash into each other out here who just...
Yeah, starting to get more crowded,
isn't
it?
...what they're doing. Yes, and people not hanging onto their boards. So the main danger is...
Starting to look like the Belt Parkway on the ocean.
Yes, it is. So the main danger is other people's surfboards, I'd say. With me, I mean, yeah, I have lots of little injuries, of concussions, broken nose, you know, broken this and that, but...
What do you mean, broken this and that?
I don't know. My ankles are a mess. It seems like everything that's wrong with me is from surfing, but most of it's long-term. It's my eyes are messed up from the glare. I've got these pterygia in both eyes. My ears are really messed up from cold water. I've had 3 operations. My skin is a mess. I'm always having this basal cell carcinoma dug out, and I hope it remains only like that.
Are you oblivious to the danger, or it just comes with the territory, and if you don't want to get hurt, don't surf?
If you know what you're doing in the water, it's usually not at all dangerous. You know, if you, the first time you go out, you don't really know what to do. You get hit by your board, usually first time. That's sort of how you learn where not to put your surfboard.
Yeah.
But if you've been doing it for a million years, all those dangers go away. In a crowd, there's other people's boards flying around. And in serious waves, there's the bottom and the power of the waves themselves. And when it's dangerous, though, you know that if you have a lot of experience.
Have you ever been terrified?
Yes.
Where?
In Hawaii, in Madeira.
What's the terrifying bit?
For me, the worst moments have been in really big waves. Last year in Hawaii, I did something stupid. I was on too small a board in big waves at a place called Makaha in Hawaii. And I got frustrated because I was on a small board, hard to catch waves. So I moved in. I sat too far in. I sat in a really dangerous spot, and I paid the price. I got held down for a very long time by a couple of big waves, and I've actually taken a solemn vow not to do anything that stupid again.
Do you want your daughter to surf?
No.
She's how old now?
13.
And you've never kind of done with her what you just did with me?
I've pushed her into little waves.
Is she suitably terrified?
Not bad. I mean,
well,
I even took her out to her mother's distress before she could swim. I took her out in Costa Rica and rode some waves.
Whoa. You took her out surfing before she could swim.
It was totally safe. she had one of those little things around her, those little floaty things. I had a death grip on her leg. She was not going to fall off. The waves were small. We were on a big board. But it was taken ill by my wife and others.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah. But then she and I, in Hawaii one time, were out on a giant tandem board riding together. We've done that a few times, you know, ridden together just on our bellies, me and back. And I made a mistake, and we had a really big board, like an 11-foot board. And
she got smacked.
And had her dad land on her from a height, and then hold her under for a little while his legs were tied up by a leash, and it was generally pretty rough and traumatic. And she hasn't surfed since, I don't think.
Get ready to slide back a little bit. You did a great job of staying under after you ate it.
I'm really good at failure.
I mean, you were in no danger because you were with that side of you. But okay. In principle, you gotta just...
You're gonna let me know when there's a wave coming, right?
Yeah. Wave coming right now.
I'm okay. Trying to be more careful. Always make sure I get back to shore. That's the main thing.
Yeah! Oh, Jesus Christ! Now you have to stand up on the thing. I think I'm hooked. I'm ready to go to Haiti or wherever.
This book is a memoir, and it uses surfing as a vehicle, as a way of living. And when you look back on all the time you've spent in the water and thinking about surfing, it seems to me like it's like physical chess in a way. It's meaningful and meaningless at the same time. Right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's the most useless thing you could possibly do. It's just a monomaniacal pastime, and really doesn't resemble sport. There's nobody keeping score. You'd rather do it alone, usually, although there's a performance aspect.
You want to be seen?
Yes, you want to be seen. You want to do it well. You want to do it stylishly. That's important.
And it has to do with masculinity?
Not necessarily. Some women surf beautifully, but it's...
I meant your own masculinity.
Well, it's certainly... Especially in bigger waves, more challenging waves, it's a continual proving ground. Yes,
the New Yorker is known for its fact-checking department. How do you fact-check a memoir when you're depending on a combination of memoir and spotty documents from your own life?
I don't know. We got a hold of The New Yorker published an excerpt from the first part of the book, which was set in the mid '60s. So there was that work to be done. And the checker got a hold of, my best friend from those days, a kid named Roddy Kalakakui, who's now a lifeguard at a resort on another island in his 60s with grandkids. And there he was. And he was just the same. He was saying, you know, you got to get over here. I've got just the right board for you. I've got this place, Hanalei Bay on Kauai, just wired. You got to say, and I'm going. I'm going next winter. I mean, it was really...
I have no doubt. What can you do less well now that you're not only a man of parts, but a man of 60?
62, yeah.
Who's counting? This is a really tough thing to do, get up on a board and ride a wave and stay out there for a long period of time. What becomes trickier, harder, more painful?
The general process of what surfers call becoming a kook again, a kook as a beginner, is psychologically quite painful, and that's what goes on when you get old.
You feel that you're a beginner again in some way?
Not that bad, but you're headed in that direction. Yeah. You know, you peaked a while ago as a surfer. You can read waves just as well. I see where I need to be, I see what I need to do, and what do you know, you're not as quick or as strong as you used to be. Where you really notice it, or I really notice it, is in the pop-up, which you and I haven't got to yet.
Yeah, well, that'll be tomorrow.
Yeah. Springing to your feet. On a small board, a short board, which is what I still ride, the timing's got to be perfect, and you got to be strong.
But for the record, I think it's easy to say that you're by far the best surfer out here, no matter what the age. I'm gonna just make that call.
Okay, I'll accept that accolade as low as the
bar
is out here.
It's a pretty low bar. When do you stop?
I have no plans to stop. I do know guys who surf into their 80s. Obviously on bigger boards and gentler waves and they
on lakes.
Try to find some way to grow old, some way to grow old gracefully.
I mean, to watch Bill do it, even on a small wave out in Far Rockaway, and nobody else is getting up on their boards for more than a half a second, and Bill, at age 60-something, just rides the thing in with ease all the way in. That's pretty amazing. There he goes. Oh my God.
William Finnegan's book is called Barbarian Days. He told me he's headed to Hawaii in the next few months.
I'm I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.